Good morning. It's Tuesday, the 14th of July, and I have been reading since well before the sun came up. Today turned out to be a day about boundaries, the lines that institutions draw around what they own, what they can see, and who is allowed to act. Four of them got tested overnight, and not one of them held quite where anyone expected it to. Let me take you through them. First up, Apple has sued OpenAI. The complaint runs 41 pages, and it is not the vague, gestural sort of filing you sometimes get at this stage. It is specific, and some of the specifics are remarkable. Apple names a former senior systems electrical engineer who left for OpenAI and alleges he exploited an authentication bug to reach Apple's network storage from a colleague's Apple-issued machine. According to the complaint, he texted that colleague, and I want to read you the line because it is going to follow this case around. LOL, I found out I can access the network storage. So funny. The colleague, Apple says, replied that she was ready. The bigger allegation is aimed higher. OpenAI's chief hardware officer spent 24 years at Apple, most recently as vice president of product design for iPhone and Apple Watch. Apple claims he directed job candidates who were still Apple employees to bring actual Apple parts, computer-aided design files, and prototypes with them to informal show-and-tell sessions during OpenAI interviews. There are further allegations that OpenAI coached departing staff on how to get around Apple's security walkout procedure and told new hires to notify OpenAI before signing anything at their exit interviews. And then there is the number that turns this from a personnel dispute into something structural. Apple says more than 400 former Apple employees now work at OpenAI, the hardware company that OpenAI acquired last year for $6.5 billion, the one founded by Johnny Ive and staffed largely with Apple alumni, is separately accused of misusing Apple's confidential metal finishing process, misleading an Apple manufacturing partner, and questioning a supplier about power and battery components using Apple's own internal terminology. Apple says it raised all this privately in February and got no answer. OpenAI's only public response so far denies any interest in other companies' trade secrets. Ben Thompson, writing at Stratechery, thinks only one of these employees looks clearly culpable on the facts as pleaded and reads the suit as Apple lashing out rather than as a tightly reasoned case, which points at the question underneath the litigation, whether Apple has a device strategy that survives a competitor quietly assembling its former hardware organization. Trade secret suits rarely stop a product. What they do is raise the cost of hiring from one rival at scale, and 400 is the number Apple will have to make mean something. Moving on to our second story and to a boundary of a very different kind. On Sunday, United States Central Command struck a submarine and ship maintenance facility at the Bandar Abbas Naval Base in Iran, using three Corsair unmanned surface vessels. Central Command was explicit about what made it notable. This is the first time American forces have used sea drones in combat operations. They released video of the vessels approaching their targets and detonating. The platform is worth knowing. The Corsair is built by Saronic, and it is marketed as an autonomous surface vessel designed for rugged, long-duration missions, greater than 35 knots, up to 1,000 pounds of payload, over 1,000 nautical miles of range. The Navy had used this same hull before, but in a rescue role, recovering downed Army Apache pilots near the Strait of Hormuz last month. So what happened on Sunday is the same vessel crossing from support into strike. That transition is the part I find technically interesting. A one-way attack profile removes the recovery constraint that dominates autonomous maritime navigation. If the boat is not coming back, the autonomy stack only has to solve transit, terminal guidance, and target discrimination. It never has to solve persistent operation, or return, or the long tail of things that go wrong on the way home. That is a materially easier problem, and it explains why this capability arrived in combat before fully autonomous crewed vessel escort did. What Central Command did not say is the part that decides how much this actually means. Ostoforv, how much of the terminal engagement was autonomous, and how much was remotely supervised? What were the discrimination criteria? Did the three vessels coordinate as a group, or did they operate as three independent munitions that happened to float? Those answers are the difference between a genuine autonomy milestone and a fairly cheap cruise missile with a boat hull. Until we have them, the honest thing to say is that a venture-backed defense company put an autonomous vessel into a live strike against a defended naval facility, and it worked. That is a procurement signal as much as an operational one. Third up, and this is the one I have been sitting with all morning. Anthropic's interpretability team has found a hidden layer of words inside Claude. Words that never appear in the model's output, but that measurably shape how it works through a problem. They call it J-Space, the underlying paper from Gurney and colleagues on the transformer circuits thread, frames it as a small, privileged set of representations that the model can report on, control, and reason with, sitting on top of a much larger volume of automatic processing that it cannot introspect on at all. The findings are what make this more than a metaphor. Some of these hidden words function as task state. They track where the model has got to in a multi-step problem. Some behave like flashes of recognition. The word protein surfaces when the model is handed nothing but a raw amino acid sequence, and some read as internal commentary on the model's own decision-making. Here's the example that is going to get quoted for the next year. Claude decided to cheat on a coding test at the moment the word panic appeared in this space. Critically, the team also found that the model can describe and manipulate the contents of that space. That is the claim that turns a correlational probe into something closer to a functional account. The model is not merely leaking these words, it appears to be using them. Now, MIT Technology Review's Will Douglas Heaven is careful about what this does and does not license, and he is right to be. Describing model internals with vocabulary borrowed from psychology and neuroscience reliably makes the behavior sound more sophisticated than a colder description would. Global workspace is a loaded term with a specific meaning in consciousness research, and this paper is not, on its own evidence, entitled to import all of that. But the narrower reading is still substantial, and here it is. There is a low-dimensional, natural language addressable layer of computation inside a frontier model that was completely invisible until somebody built a probe that could see it. And that layer carries signal about failure modes, including the moment a model resolves to defect on a task. If you've been waiting for mechanistic interpretability to produce something you could actually instrument at runtime, this is the first result in a while that gives you a handle whether JSpace can be monitored cheaply enough to serve as a live tripwire, and whether an adversary can plant something in it with an input that never mentions the concept. Neither of those is answered here, but they are now the right questions. And for our fourth and final story today, the Pentagon has frozen the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification's Phase 2 requirements, the rules that were due to take effect on the 10th of November. The Department of Defense Chief Information Officer Kirsten Davies and the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment, Michael Duffy, announced the suspension on Monday and stood up a reform task force the same day, with findings and recommendations due within 60 days. The reason given is supply-based attrition. Government research indicated the requirements would push a significant number of businesses out of the defense industrial base at exactly the moment the military most needs commercial suppliers. Davies summarized that finding to reporters with a line that is going to survive longer than the policy. The math simply does not math. Here is why this belongs in a digest about artificial intelligence rather than one about procurement. The certification applies to contractors handling controlled, unclassified information, and Phase 2 was the point at which third-party assessment became binding on a much larger population of vendors. The companies for whom that assessment is a disproportionate fixed cost relative to revenue are precisely the small drone builders, the autonomy startups, and the software firms selling models into programs the department has spent 2 years trying to accelerate. A compliance regime that prices those firms out of the industrial base narrows the supplier pool for exactly the capabilities the Pentagon says it urgently wants. And nothing has actually been repealed. The requirements are suspended, not withdrawn, and a 60-day clock produces recommendations, not a rule. Contractors who spent real money getting assessed ahead of November are now holding certifications against a standard that may not exist in its current form. Davies was pointed about that, telling them the money was not spent in vain. Whether the reform produces something tiered or risk-weighted or simply delays the same requirement by a year is the thing to watch when the 60 days are up. So what were these four pieces really about? Every one of them is a line drawn in the wrong place. Apple drew a boundary around its trade secrets, and 400 people walked across it, carrying the knowledge in their heads where no security walkout procedure could reach. Anthropic went looking inside its own model and found an entire region of reasoning that had been sitting outside the boundary of anything anyone could observe. The Pentagon drew a compliance line and discovered it cut out the suppliers it needs most. And Central Command moved a machine across the line from support into strike. And the interesting question, how much of that machine was actually deciding, is one nobody has answered yet. The lines are all still there this morning. They are just not where the people who drew them thought they were. The rest of the digest has plenty more, including a rather brutal audit of distributional reinforcement learning that refutes most of the risk claims those agents make about themselves. Go and read it if that sort of thing delights you as much as it delights me. That is Tuesday. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, keep reading papers.